ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's one of Australia's most baffling unsolved missing persons cases. In 2007, four people, including a five-year-old girl, vanished in Western Australia amid rumours of bizarre behaviour, cults, and long-hidden secrets.
Yep, we're trying to track them down.
I'm Dominique Bayens, and I've been investigating for the new season of Expanse, the Nanup 4. Search Expanse on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Norman, I know that you're not a supplement guy, but if I could choose one supplement to have, it would definitely be the chewy vitamin C.
Oh, really?
They're yummy. Oh, they really? Taste like a lolly.
Has it got sugar in it? Is it rotting your teeth too?
No, I think they're called sugarless C or something like that. I think there's something Pavlovian about it. Like as a kid, it felt like maybe getting a bit of a treat. And so even as an adult, when I see them, I'm like, oh, yummy treat.
And have you been relieved of a cold as a result?
No, you've cured me of wanting any supplements, which I suppose is kind of preempting the answer to today's question here on...
I might be wrong. So let's just not give it away here.
All right. Well, let's get into it. This is, of course, What's That Rash?
The podcast which answers the health questions that everybody's asking.
People today, Norman, are asking about vitamin C supplementation. Angeline says, I tend to catch colds and flu pretty easily, so I try to get the flu shot each year and generally keep a healthy lifestyle. In recent years, I've also started taking vitamin C, a 1,000 milligram daily dose. I'm not sure if it's actually helped me. Is there any evidence vitamin C supplements work? And if so, how much should we take daily? My brother-in-law takes 2,000 milligrams every day and he never seems to get sick. He claims that it's the vitamin C that does it. Claude has also emailed saying, although I prefer to get my vitamins from food rather than supplements, I tend to have one or two chewable C's a day.
Oh, he's onto the same thing as you.
Yeah, they taste good. I remember reading a study that said the more C in your blood, the less cancer cells. Also, it's associated with boosting the immune system. But I've heard you say it can be counterproductive. And someone said it's hard on the kidneys. And then Beatrice is blowing everyone else out of the water, asking about mega doses of vitamin C, like 60,000 milligrams administered via an IV drip. Is it safe? So yeah, we've got questions about vitamin C today, Norman.
We have. And it's got a rich history.
Oh my gosh.
Well, we should explain what a vitamin is to start with. You say vitamins, I say vitamins.
All I want to talk about is scurvy, but fine, let's talk about it. What is the definition of a vitamin?
So a vitamin is a micronutrient, and we'll come back to this idea of a micronutrient, in other words, small dose, that your body needs to survive, to important metabolic processes that we can't make ourselves. The one exception to that is vitamin D, which you can make yourself when exposed to sunlight. But most of the vitamins are ones where you actually need to take them via your mouth.
And for an animal, say a human, that needs something but can't manufacture it in their body, we're actually pretty well adapted to getting it out of the food that we eat. So for most humans, vitamin C, you get it most notoriously through fruit and vegetables. And I think most people associate vitamin C specifically with citrus fruit because they are very high in it.
Indeed. And there are animals that can make their own vitamin C, but not humans.
Most animals can make their own vitamin C. That's what's actually really wild to me. Humans and most primates, but not all primates, and bats also need to supplement vitamin C from their diet, but most other animals can just like figure it out by themselves.
So let's get to scurvy. How can we stay away from it?
I thought you'd never ask. I think if you are informed enough about health to be listening to What's That Rash, you probably know that scurvy is a vitamin C deficiency. Just a little recap on how scurvy presents in the body. It's hectic. Vitamin C is important in the manufacturing of collagen, which is pretty important for like our body sticking together.
It's part of our connective tissue.
And so then the symptoms of scurvy, well, let me read to you part of the ship's log from Commander George Anson. This is from a British exhibition in the 1740s. They lost 1,300 of an original 2,000 men to illness, at least some of which to scurvy. And he described almost the whole crew was afflicted by symptoms including a luxuriancy of fungous flesh, putrid gums, ooh, and the most dreadful terrors.
And sudden death.
Why do you die from it?
Well, your body essentially falls apart and you bleed and you get internal hemorrhage and external hemorrhage. Basically, body failure.
The thing with scurvy that's interesting to me is that the cure for it is really simple. Vitamin C almost straight away starts to reverse the effects of scurvy. And it's something that humans have kind of known about and then forgotten and rediscovered over a few thousand years. There's even in ancient Egyptian texts this idea that eating vegetables can help prevent it. But
we've made a false hero here, though, our discovery, haven't we? In the British Navy.
There's a few heroes. Are you talking about Lind?
James Lind, who found that lemon juice improved scurvy, but he actually never really tied that down.
He also blamed a lot of things on damp air, which, I mean, people loved to blame things on air back in those days. And to be fair, I can only imagine...
Well, you and I did for COVID a lot.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Maybe we should have been taking vitamin C. No, I'm not going to be on that track again.
No, let's not go there, please. No, I mean, obviously some diseases are aerosol and airborne diseases. Vitamin deficiency is not one of them, but I can only imagine what the inside of a ship's hull smelt like after 10 or 12 weeks at sea. So maybe it's a defensible thing. Also, on ship's hulls, sailors who ate the ship's rats were inadvertently protecting themselves against scurvy, because rats are one of the creatures that can synthesize their own vitamin C. And if you were a hungry enough sailor to eat a rat, you probably were getting vitamin C from that rat.
And Lind never smelled a rat in terms of his research.
Exactly. So Lind is the person that we often kind of associate with vitamin C and scurvy prevention. But there was a couple of generations of scientists that sort of built on that research to take us to knowing about vitamin C specifically and also synthesizing it. A couple of really important people in this journey. Albert St. Gheorghe, who was awarded the 1937 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine, he was one of the people that got the chemical structure nailed down. He didn't want to call it vitamin C at first. Do you know what he wanted to call it?
I think he called it hexuronic acid or something, didn't he?
Before he called it that, so you know how if something's a sugar, it's sometimes got the suffix O-S-E, like O's? He wanted to call it God knows because he didn't really know what it was for, but he knew it was a sugar of some sort.
Hilarious.
Anyway, basically, they figured it out. It was the same thing as ascorbic acid. Do you know why it's called ascorbic acid?
No, I don't.
A, as in preventing or against, scorby, scurvy.
Oh.
It's anti-scurvy acid. That's really where the name comes from.
But then we have another Nobel laureate who gets involved in the vitamin C story.
Are you talking about Linus Pauling?
I am.
This is a really weird sidebar. So
it's Linus... more a sidebar. He was front and center.
Anyway, so I suppose the thing to say about Linus Pauling is he's a Nobel laureate. So his field of science was chemistry.
And structural chemistry, really very, very basic chemistry.
Right.
On which modern chemistry is built. So it was a brilliant Nobel Prize, but like a few Nobel laureates, he expanded beyond his area of expertise, but pretty much like a medical journalist.
I'll let you say it, not me. He actually won two Nobel Prizes. So he won one for chemistry, good for him. And then he also won a second Nobel in 1963, the Peace Prize, for his work towards nuclear disarmament. So he was a politically charged figure. He was sort of tarred with the communist brush. But in addition to that, he suffered from some health issues. And in his kind of quest to keep himself healthy, he sort of fell down a bit of a vitamin C rabbit hole that we're kind of really only just climbing out of today.
He became a major promoter of vitamin C for extended lifespan, extended healthy lifespan, and indeed to prevent the common cold. He just thought vitamin C was an amazing compound that had huge health benefits, not just in preventing infection, but also preventing cancer.
So Pauling's thing was what he would eventually call orthomolecular medicine. It's a Greek prefix, ortho meaning sort of straight or correct or right. And his idea was that if you had the right molecules in your body, you could cure a whole suite of health problems. And I suppose it's fitting that vitamin C is in this debate because you have a deficiency disease, which is scurvy, and you have a vitamin which cures it. And he wanted to kind of extend that to be like, what if you had even more and you could cure other things as well? And his devotion to the idea that it could be something of a cure-all has had some real like long-term ripples in terms of our understanding of what this vitamin can do.
And it spawned a lot of research. So he was criticised for his views on vitamin C and by the mainstream medical community. Now, the mainstream medical community has been wrong about a lot of things, but there was really very little or no research to back this up. He became an author on a few papers, which were poorly conducted, and he really was unable to prove scientifically his assertions about vitamin C. And around that time and subsequently, people have done randomized trials of vitamin C supplementation in the prevention of the common cold and found that at best, it might shorten the duration of symptoms, but that's about it.
So I think some of the big claims around vitamin C are common cold, like you said, immune system broadly, maybe it's protecting you against colds, maybe it's protecting you against other things as well. And then cancer prevention, especially that third question that we got, which was about big IV doses. Let's talk through what we actually know about these three things.
Let's go back to that comment I made right at the beginning that vitamins are really micronutrients. Mm-hmm. They work in the body in small, relatively small doses associated with other compounds in food that almost certainly help those vitamins and other micronutrients to work. So vitamin C in doses that you would get in foods is actually an antioxidant. So the oxidative process is part of that aging process. It's the toxicity of oxygen, essentially rusting your tissues from the inside out. So the idea here is that you have these antioxidants, one of which is vitamin C, which help mop up this process, but not by themselves, in association with other bioactive compounds. So here's the weird thing, which Pauling never actually knew about, and has only been known about recently. For reasons which are not fully understood, in high doses, particularly when it's given intravenously, it turns into a pro-oxidant. In other words, it speeds up the damage to tissues and the aging process. So when you take very high doses intravenously, you're taking vitamin C as a drug which actually can damage cells. So there is, in fact, it turns out, almost certainly an anti-cancer effect of high-dose intravenous vitamin C, which by itself does not seem to have any significant effect on cancer, but when given with other chemotherapeutic agents, seems to enhance their effects. Now, the evidence is not brilliant on that. There are clinical trials still going on, a little bit of evidence of prolonged survival in pancreatic cancer when high-dose vitamin C is used in association with chemotherapy. So it's not yet ready for showtime, but there is an anti-cancer effect. But it's not because it's good for your body. It's because it's bad for your body.
It's killing cancer cells. It can kill your healthy cells as well, by
That's
the sounds
the theory.
Of it.
Yep.
Because I was going to say, like, why on earth do we even have these high-dose vitamin C supplements being offered? But it turns out there could be an application for them, but it's a pretty narrow part of the population.
Yeah, and it doesn't look as though it works when you take it orally.
I think the thing with the end of Pauling's story is that it ended up being this big beef where he was very pro high-dose vitamin C infusions because it was controversial, because he was a controversial guy. The Mayo Clinic did some trials basically showing that his theory didn't work, but they used a different method of delivery. They used an oral delivery instead of an intravenous delivery. Anyway, without getting too much into the weeds, people who have commented on this have kind of observed that this whole back and forth with Pauling put the research into vitamin C back decades because it was kind of tainted by this episode.
Yeah, but those orthomolecular physicians who are still around actually give high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And from the evidence that we've got, it's not something you particularly want to have. Interestingly, the Australian Institute of Sport uses vitamin C after intense exercise to help repair muscles.
This is what I wanted to ask about. What's it doing in muscles? And has this got anything to do with this idea that overall it might be good for your immune system?
Well, what they're doing is trying to, the theory is after intense exercise, you get increased oxidation, what's called reactive oxygen species, and you give the vitamin C to reduce these reactive oxygen species, which you'd have to say that if it was really high dose, you'd have to question whether or not they're achieving their end there, but they do seem to have some evidence to back them up.
Okay, so to kind of bring this home, Angeline and Claude were both asking about moderate-level vitamin C supplementation. Beatrice is asking about this really high-level vitamin C supplementation. What do we say?
You would avoid high-dose supplementation. You would avoid supplementation altogether, to be honest, and really just take it in the diet because it's meant to be taken in relatively small doses with other bioactive compounds that have yet to be identified, some of which have, but some of which haven't. So you really stick with what we know is that food works.
Food works. And I think just for some like clarity, if you don't want to get scurvy, you only need about 8 milligrams a day of vitamin C. You can get this from 100 grams of onion. Like one orange, one potato has 27 milligrams of vitamin C.
Speaking of potatoes, scurvy broke out in Ireland with the potato blight in the 19th century.
Exactly. And I think we think of citrus fruits as being very, very high in vitamin C, and they are, but you actually don't need to eat very much fruit and vegetables to get what you need in terms of vitamin C. You should be eating 5 and 2 every day anyway for all sorts of different reasons. I guess what I'm trying to say here is don't stress too much about it.
And the sad story with Pauling, I mean, he lived a long time. I think he lived well into his 90s, but he was extolling the virtues of vitamin C for cancer and unfortunately died the following year of cancer. But, you know, that's not Schadenfreude, just unfortunate.
Exactly. And I guess the fact that we're all human, even if we're really, really smart.
And there was a question about the damage to kidneys. And in fact, too much vitamin C can produce kidney stones. So there is a burden on the kidneys from too much vitamin C potentially producing kidney stones. You don't want to get a kidney stone. Very painful.
So those yummy little chews that I was saying before, probably not worth it?
Probably not worth it. You might get a pain in the side.
Angeline, Claude, Beatrice, thank you all so much for asking us your question. You can ask us your question by emailing thatrash@abc.net.au.
What's in the mailbag?
Megan says, I recently listened to your podcast on peptides. And she says, before a recent hike, one of our group got injured and to aid a speedy recovery did everything they could, in inverted commas, including injecting peptides. There were two occasions peptides were injected and they suffered a reaction that increased their heart rate. So the group member went on the hike, no problem, but then returned. They got suspicious about the bacteriostatic water that was used to inject the peptide. So they got this bacteriostatic water, they sniffed it, they got their hands on it and sort of rubbed it on their hands. Again, a couple of minutes, severe rise in their heart rate and blood pressure, some skin tingling, some dizziness, tremors lasting 30 minutes with zero localized reactions such as redness, itching or swelling, and then 2 days later had a similar episode at work. What on earth could be going on here? And I can't remember if we went into bacteriostatic water, what it even is, Norman.
Look, like anything that you buy online, you have no idea what was in it. So there could have been an adrenaline-like substance in the water. There could be another chemical that affects the cardiovascular system. You just don't know all sorts of things. You've just got no idea what you're injecting.
So just like massive proceed with caution sign here.
You don't know what you're buying.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for the question. Also, Norman, I'm smarting because two different people have emailed us to correct my pronunciation of the word asterisk, which I do know how to pronounce. Sometimes my brain just works faster than my mouth does.
Yeah, apparently you said asterisk.
I did, and I actually really enjoyed the Asterix and Obelisk comics when I was a kid, so thank you for the trip down memory lane.
Yeah, just an asterisk in history.
If you want to correct Norman's pronunciation on anything, the email address is thatrash@abc.net.au.
You say tomato, I say tomato. You say potato, I say potato. La 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 la. Let's call the whole thing off. But we're not calling the whole thing off. We'll see you next week.
See you then.